We're talking about a federal civil suit filed this week in the Eastern District of Wisconsin here on The Morning Show. The suit alleges that Facebook empowered and enabled militia groups to organize, leading to the shooting deaths of two protesters in Kenosha 1 month ago. And that was in the wake of the protests that erupted following the police shooting of Jacob Blake. What do you want to know about this complaint? Do you think Facebook enabled a, quote, call to arms, encouraging violence against protesters? Conversation right here, 800-642-1234. Jennifer Sarine is an attorney in Massachusetts representing four people, including the partner of one of the Kenosha victims. Jennifer, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much for having me.
So the case of accused shooter Kyle Rittenhouse, the 17-year-old charged with killing two protesters in Kenosha, that goes before a judge today for a preliminary hearing, which is on whether he can be extradited to Wisconsin. But you're bringing a civil suit here. Can you lay it out for us?
Sure. So the suit can actually be broken up into two parts. The first is against Rittenhouse, as well as the white nationalist militia groups, the Kenosha Guard and the Boogaloo Boys. And we're actually using a law from the Reconstruction era. It was enacted in 1871 to prevent the KKK from violently harassing Black Americans, particularly when they were trying to vote. And we're using that law to allege the defendant created a racially motivated conspiracy to deprive Black Americans and their supporters of their constitutional rights. So that's a lot of legalese right there. So to explain it a little bit more simply, the suit is alleging that the white nationalists got together under the guise of quote unquote protecting property and used Facebook to organize the group that would eventually go on to include Rittenhouse, who, as we know, ended up shooting three people and killing two. And so that is the constitutional right that we're saying has been violated, which is to be free from racially motivated violence. And that's the 42 U.S.C. Section 1985, subsection 3 claim for all my fellow legal nerds out there.
Okay. And now we're getting into the legalese.
Right, right.
Tell us about the plaintiffs in your case. Who are your clients?
So we have four clients. And we have Christopher McNeil. He was at the protests and peacefully demonstrating when he was threatened at gunpoint by several heavily armed white men, and he's afraid for his life, especially as a Black American man being threatened at gunpoint. Then Hannah Giddings, she was the life partner of Anthony Huber, Rittenhouse's second victim, and she has suffered a great deal, obviously, of emotional and economic harm from these actions of the militia groups. And then we have Nathan Pete. He's a videographer who went to film the protests as well as participate. And he witnessed the shooting of Rittenhouse's first victim. And then we have Carmen Palmer. She drove down from Milwaukee with her children and social justice group to join the protests. After they were followed on the highway by white men with guns and trucks, they finally were able to get to the protest, and where she and her children were threatened again at gunpoint. So they had laser pointers pointed at them. And so she and her group understandably decided it was too dangerous to continue to protest. So they went back to their cars and they found that all of their tires were slashed. And so they were unable to actually leave Kenosha. And at that point, another group of men came and Carmen got pepper sprayed. And she eventually was able to get back home, but not after a lot of really intense scrounging for spare tires.
Well, I want to intervene here. And so the Boogaloo Boys is this extremist group aimed at overthrowing the government, a right-wing extremist group. The Kenosha Guard here is this militia group started on Facebook. You also name the accused shooter, Kyle Rittenhouse. How did you decide who is responsible?
So the 1985 claim is alleging a conspiracy. And what we're saying is Mathewson and the Kenosha Guard started the suit or started the event page that then resulted in this racially motivated conspiracy to deprive the protesters of their constitutional rights.
We're talking with Jennifer Sarine, an attorney representing four people in a federal civil lawsuit filed this week against Facebook, the accused Kenosha shooter, and alleged militia members. Is Facebook negligent here? Were the rights of protesters violated? What questions do you have about this suit? It's 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up. This conversation is ahead here on the Ideas Network. It is the morning show. We're discussing a federal civil suit against Facebook over the deaths of two protesters in Kenosha 1 month ago. The suit filed earlier this week, it alleges Facebook was negligent for not taking down pages on its platform that, quote, empowered right-wing militias to inflict extreme violence and deprive plaintiffs and protesters of their rights. Could the deaths have been prevented if Facebook had taken down the pages? Conversation right here, 800-642-1234. Jennifer Sarine is one of the attorneys who brought the suit, and she stays with us. So, Jennifer, what outcomes are you seeking from this civil suit? What do you want Facebook to do?
We would really like to see Facebook be held accountable and take responsibility for their failure to act. So they received over 400 reports of that these pages were violating their community standards. So to put that in perspective, that they made up 66% of the reports for that day. The next highest reported event had 18 flags. So it's a pretty big flaw in Facebook's system. And the way that their moderation system works right now is that they hire a company to hire independent contractors. And those independent contractors are overworked, underpaid. They're not given clear instructions as to what the Facebook moderation policies actually are. So we would like Facebook to actually hire these moderators and make them full-time employees, give them clear instructions so Charlottesville and now Kenosha don't happen again.
Let's take a call. Now, Lindsay is joining us from Milwaukee. Hi, Lindsay.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. What would you like to say?
I just wanted to say thank you for bringing this suit forward because I saw that Facebook group and I am not their target audience, I'm sure, by any means. And I don't even know how it was brought in front of my face, but I was kind of scrolling through some of the posts and it was very alarming. There was a lot of talk of, you know, be armed, only come if you're serious, to do what's necessary, that kind of thing. And I sent it like screenshots to my family and I was like, people are going to die, because it was just so, it was obvious to me from the language that I saw, and it just was shocking to me that it was not taken down by Facebook until after people had already died.
Lindsay, thank you for calling in. Jennifer, Lindsay says she wasn't even a target audience for this, and she saw these posts.
Exactly. So the algorithm that Facebook has right now in combination with its moderation policies is very outdated, and it needs to change.
Let's take one more call here. Mike in Clear Lake. Hi, Mike.
Hello.
Hi. Can you hear us, Mike?
Yes, I can. I'm I want to say there's a cause and effect for everything. This isn't white militia people or any of that nature. What happened was there's violence going on the streets. A kid got attacked by somebody with a skateboard and a gun. And, you know, the effect was they got shot for it.
Well, so, and I'm going to jump in here, Mike. What happened that night is disputed. It will eventually be hashed out in court. The accused shooter, Kyle Rittenhouse, is in custody in Illinois. Here's what I'm wondering from you, Jennifer, is that, you know, there's a similar suit. And in the wake of Charlottesville, McNeil versus Facebook, and do you see that these suits that are citing Reconstruction era laws, do they have any grounds in the law here? Do you feel like you'll be successful?
Absolutely. So the Charlottesville complaint survived a motion to dismiss already. There was a very long federal opinion detailing how these causes of action can be properly brought. And it's a very strong opinion in support of our claims.
What is the timeline here, very quickly, as we have to let you go?
Sure. So it takes a long time. We're hoping Facebook will just settle, because all we want to see from them is actionable change. But as far as the actual lawsuit goes, the trial for Charlottesville is scheduled in April 2021, and that suit was brought in 2017, if that gives you an idea of the timeline.
Jennifer, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Jennifer Serene is an attorney representing plaintiffs in a federal civil rights lawsuit brought this week against Facebook and several militia members. I'm Kate Archer Kent. This is The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. We're looking closer at Milwaukee's executive city budget proposal for 2021 here on The Morning Show. Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett presented his proposed budget to the city's Common Council on Tuesday. His feelings on the state legislature's role in these tough economic times?
The dynamic the state has created is unsustainable. But right now, we have to face the immediate fiscal reality, a reality that none of us relishes.
Milwaukeeans, what do you think of the proposed budget? Conversation right here, 800-642-1234. Allison Durr covers city and county government for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Allison, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much for having me.
So spending cuts is top line here in this budget. What is contributing to the need to cut back significantly on the city budget?
Well, I really think of the challenges the city is facing as existing in three separate pots. So there's the revenue challenge that anytime you talk with somebody from the city, they almost immediately go back to. And this is the relationship with the state that Mayor Tom Barrett referenced in the clip that you played. So, you know, they're looking at challenges in terms of raising revenue, because of state-imposed limits on that ability at the local government level. They're also looking at, flat shared revenue payments from the state. So that's a longer-standing issue. The second kind of challenge that the city is facing is this pension obligation. So in 2023, the city is looking at a really significant anticipated jump in its annual pension contribution. And the reason that that's relevant today is because they're trying to set aside millions of dollars to kind of smooth this jump between 2022 and 2023. So the budget this year reflects an $8 million, setting aside $8 million for the pension reserve fund in order to kind of start saving to
meet those obligations.
Yes. And then in 2020, we have the coronavirus pandemic and the economic fallout, marches for racial justice. Those are very 2020 specific, but those are also in play here.
All right. Well, let's circle back then to the pension costs increasing. What is happening there? Why are those costs going up?
So in 2023, the city's actuary estimates that Milwaukee could be facing a contribution that more than doubles from about $70 million to potentially $190 million. The city budget office uses a different set of assumptions, and they put that increase at about $160 million. There are a number of reasons that this is increasing, but it's driven by a drop in the anticipated future earnings on the city's pension fund, in addition to other factors.
This budget would also decrease the police department by 120 positions. What is behind that decision?
I think it's really a fiscal decision. The Milwaukee Police Department in the 2020 budget was about 46% of the general fund. So that is a huge budget for the city. And I think that's why you're seeing those cuts coming out of the police department. And this also follows the 60 police officer position cut, also through attrition, in 2020. So you're seeing kind of 2 years of cuts in the police department.
We've also heard from activists, though, amid the protests and Black Lives Matter movement, calling for the end of police brutality and for the city to address racism. Does this decision relate to those calls as well? Is there a connection?
You know, I think when I had talked with Mayor Barrett, he had said that he's trying to balance, you know, this desire to have a police department that's more in tune with the community and at the same time have a police department with the resources to address concerns related to, crimes such as reckless driving, burglaries, other challenges that the city is facing. So I think this is primarily a fiscal, a fiscal decision just because of the pressures that the city is facing financially.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Allison Durr, who covers city and county government for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and we're looking at the proposed 2021 budget. What questions do you have about Milwaukee's fiscal challenges? Do you support raising Milwaukee County sales tax to support public services? 800-642-1234 is where we're at for conversation. So, Allison, circling back to that revenue pot and issues with the state, you know, both the mayor and the Common Council president pointed to the state legislature's role in this and in the financial hurdles here. What is going on?
Well, local leaders at the city and county level had last year requested that the state allow a 1% sales tax referendum to go before voters. That that did not pass at the state legislature. So, you know, that challenge kind of continues today, where they're not able to raise that revenue. But then they also have these flat shared revenue payments from the state. And so between those two, they're facing some significant challenges.
The city's tax levy, though, would increase. Is that right, under this proposal?
Yep. The city's tax levy would increase 2.8% to $299.2 million. And then residents would also see increased fees in addition.
There's also a proposed fee for street lighting. What is the reasoning behind this? How would that work?
You know, I think how it would work is something that is still being hashed out a little bit. But this is it would be a new fee for street lighting, kind of, that would apply both to property owners that normally pay taxes and those who don't. And that's an effort to fund the street lighting. It would, I think, if I'm remembering correctly, result in $10 million going to the Department of Public Works. And that would be a new fee for city residents.
And then there is the issue of housing, which Mayor Barrett has really wanted to focus on. What is, under this proposal, a plan to strengthen housing?
Yeah, this is a part of the budget that Mayor Barrett has called a bright light. It's $6.5 million from a tax incremental financing district north of downtown that has reached the end of its life. So the city is looking at using that funding to strengthen housing and make homeownership more accessible in the city by using a provision in state law that allows them to extend the life of this TIF district for 1 year and put those resources toward housing. Otherwise, you know, they could close the district and add its increased value to the property tax base.
So in this economic era of COVID-19, is there anything here that really pops out to you because you see a direct tie to the pandemic?
You know, I think the challenges that the city has faced in the pandemic are part of this budget. You know, local governments have been hit pretty hard by the pandemic and the economic fallout, and Milwaukee is really no different.
So as we noted, this is a proposed budget from the mayor. Can you help us understand how this budget, where it goes, what happens next?
The mayor proposed the budget on Tuesday, and now it's in the hands of the Milwaukee Common Council. So they will start their budget deliberations, and those will continue throughout the month of October. I should note that there's a public hearing on the proposed budget on October 6th, so that's an opportunity for the public to weigh in. And then budget adoption day is November 6th. So what we're going to see over the course of October is the Finance Committee, which is chaired by Alderman Michael Murphy, going department by department and really getting into the nuances of the budget. And then you'll see the committee make amendments to that budget before it is adopted on November 6th.
Do you anticipate there will be, we talked about the attrition in the police department. Are there any major cuts to positions?
Yeah, this proposed budget would cut 120 police officer positions through attrition. I think that's going to be a really big piece of this budget. There will be a lot of conversation at committee about how to approach the police department, how to approach that budget. The Common Council has also been exploring a 10% cut in the police department budget and kind of what that would mean, how that would happen. So, you know, this will definitely be something that comes up throughout the course of, throughout the course of budget deliberations. I think the question is whether there's an appetite at council to cut more or try to restore some of those positions, and you know how that would play out either way.
Allison, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Allison Durr covers city and county government for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and she's been reporting on the proposed city budget for 2021. I'm Kate Archer Kent. This is The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.